Welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I'm excited to have a special guest with me, Bambi. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, my name is Bambi. My middle name is Lynn. So together it's Bambi Lynn. I am a author of two books that I have published. One will be a year old on June 9th. And the other one was published on St. Patrick's Day of this year. I also am a mother of six adult children. I do have 13 grandchildren, and I work for Nielsen TV Ratings, part of the data company.
Wow, that's a wonderful backstory. I love that. Can you tell us a little bit about your books, of what genre they're in and what concepts they're about?
Yes, both of my books are memoirs, so they are nonfiction. The first one is The Journey of Josephine, which is the story of my life on how a broken little girl was transformed by her rag doll, which was my security blanket that knew all my secrets and all of my tears that I had shed throughout my life. And we went on a journey of healing together. So that is The Journey of Josephine, how Adele amended a broken heart. And then I also wrote The Treasures of My Heart, which is a book about how when we go through storms, sometimes we forget that within the storms are also good things that happen. So during the storms of my life, I was reminded of different things that had been actually lemonade in my life instead of just lemons. And when instead of just storms, I did have some rainbows during the times of trauma and brokenness.
Yes. And you speak a lot about trauma and brokenness. I'm wondering if you'd be open to share any experiences or stories you've had where you've been able to take something away from it that others could apply to their lives.
Absolutely. I just read a quote this morning, which I thought it was so appropriate. It says, "Recover loudly to keep others from dying quietly." And the quote was by Dr. Glenn Patrick Dole. And I thought that was so profound to me, as throughout my whole life, I have not been silent of the trauma that I had been through. As a little girl, I was sexually assaulted and molested by my grandfather. I did come from a very traumatic alcoholic home. My dad was a brutal alcoholic. He wasn't a nice one. He was mean. My parents split up several times. And by the time that I was 10 years old, my parents' relationship had dissolved. Then I had been sexually assaulted by an uncle. I tried to commit suicide at 16 years old by jumping off of a bridge. And that was my third attempt. But what happened is when I tried to jump off a bridge, a police officer stopped me, put me down to the ground, and I was sent to a psychiatric center where I found out that I was actually going to have a baby. I was a teenage pregnancy. And at that time, I accepted Christ into my life and I became a born-again Christian. And I kept my baby, and she is now, will be 37 years old this year. I also have had trauma with being married a couple times. My first husband was not faithful to me. My second husband was very tough on me, and it was a very hard domestic violence household. And I have been away from that for 15 years. So it's like a backstory, a little bit of backstory of what I had gone through and why I chose to write my stories, because I just really believe that the more that we open up and tell our stories, the more that we give other people permission behind us to tell theirs.
And so all that domestic trauma and your sexual assault, sexual abuse must have substantially impacted you as an adolescent girl when you were only 16 years old. And I'm just wondering, when you became a born-again Christian and you had your daughter, did that change your point of view? Did that change your circumstances? Was it enlightening for you?
I think that I named my daughter Amber Renee, which means little flame reborn. I believe that was a second chance. And when I accepted Christ into my life at 16, I had said, if you save me and my baby, I promise that I would honor you all the rest of the days of my life because you gave me a second chance. So she was definitely my second chance. She was somebody that It's really cool. We grew up together, so we are extremely close today.
Yes.
And she just is, she's a constant reminder that life could have been so different, that in that split second, one choice created 5 other children and 13 grandchildren because I made that one choice.
And knowing what you know now or going through the experiences, looking back, I'm wondering, was there anything that you would suggest to anyone who might be in a similar situation, any listeners who might have domestic abuse or just have a terrible childhood and they don't know how to find an escape, how to find an out? What would you suggest to them?
I would definitely suggest, I know that when children are in homes that they are experiencing sexual abuse, it is very difficult because I just talked to a friend the other day and she said, why didn't you ever say anything? And they said, the burden of a person that has been going through sexual abuse, they carry that burden of ruining their families. They carry that burden so intently that they don't want to do anything to mess up the family. So they'll keep experiencing that abuse just so they, because what's going to happen to them? As a child, I kept thinking, if I told anybody that my grandfather was sexually abusing me as a little girl, where was my grandmother going to go? That burden was so much on me. And I did not share the fact that my grandfather had sexually assaulted me, abused me as a little girl until my grandmother died, because that pressure was so great. I didn't start recovering from things until my early 20s and realizing the trauma that I had been through. I started going to counseling. I started journaling. I started reading a lot of books and realizing that I'm not alone, because I think that sometimes you're so isolated and you think that you're the only person. When my book came out, The Journey of Josephine, some of my high school friends and high school classmates had no idea what was going on in my home.
Yeah,
because I didn't share it. And so they were just as shocked. But then there were other friends and classmates and people that said that they knew something was going on. They just knew, but nobody could voice those kind of things that were going on with me as a child.
And when you're born into that situation, or when someone treats you unfairly or just with no respect, no appreciation at all, and violates your privacy, your comfort zone, I'm wondering how, if you were a child in that situation, because you said that there could have been opportunities where you could have reached out to your school, to your friends or your friends at school. Were there any counselors at your school? Or if you were in that situation, if you were to relive it, how would you change your mentality, change your mindset to feel all right to ask for that help or to voice your circumstances, to voice your situation? And this is especially prevalent to anyone who is in that situation. How can they overcome that barrier of not wanting to upset their grandmother, not wanting to ruin the family?
No, my sexual abuse and what it, things have changed so dramatically today. To remember, a lot of my abuse happened 45 years ago, when those were things that, how do I say it, which I don't want to, was like the norm kind of things. There was always the dirty old man in every family. There was the uncle in every family that are, oh, that's just uncle, whatever. That's just, so it was such a different time period than what it is today. There is more counseling. There is more opportunities to share. There is more people that are advocating for you. When it happened to me, my grandfather, I didn't say anything about my grandfather until my grandmother died. But when I got sexually assaulted by my uncle, and I had moved into his home the day after my 16th birthday, and I had ran away from home. And I went to his house thinking that it was going to be safe. And so sometimes I look back and it took me a while to be able to open up and to tell people, because I felt it was my fault, because I left the day after my 16th birthday. I moved out of my mother's house. Where was I going to go now? But when I finally, after he had been sexually abusing me for about 4 months, I finally went to the school nurse. And it was so brave, but I couldn't do it anymore. He had locked the windows. He had videoed things. He had recordings in the house, and I couldn't take it anymore. And when I went to the school nurse, the nurse looked at me and she said, "We've been waiting for you." And I was put into foster care. And then we brought charges to my uncle. And this is something that wouldn't happen today, yes. But it happened 45 years ago. He was his own attorney. So he was able to ask me questions on the stand about my life, about things that I had done as a teenager and things like that. And he received 18 months, 100 yards away from me. That was his punishment. But a few years later, he ended up in prison for 10 years. I think it was 10 years for abuse that he had done to other girls. But when I look back, 18 months, 100 yards away from me, that was his quote unquote punishment for taking a piece of my life that I could never get back.
Yes, that's disgusting. I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm wondering, you said that people knew what was going on, but they weren't able to point out the elephant in the room. And I'm just wondering, would it have been better for you if someone in that situation maybe said, "Hey, are you all right? Are you going through something? Do you need help?" If people were more direct about it, do you think that would have changed anything?
Telling the truth, I really don't know, because it was a different time period. It was just so different. Even family members, after I came out with my book, The Journey of Josephine, I had family members that said that they had tried behind the line, trying to help myself and my brothers and sisters, and didn't know the extent of the abuse that was happening and things like that. I don't think at that time,
it was sort of normalized.
It's normal. Yes. And I don't want to, it was just a different time period, yes. You know, in our lives. And there wasn't the foster care system. Where were we going to go? The foster care system was just starting. Yes. So to speak, people weren't taking their children away from their parents. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any advocacy. So the things that happened, I look at my life and I think, that's why our stories are not written for us. Our stories are written for the people behind us that are going to be following after us. So when people read my story, even if they are young or they're my age, now they have a voice. There's a voice because somebody else has said, yes, this happened to them. And I think when I wrote my book, I realized that there were people that I knew and classmates that I knew that I found out that were struggling just as much as I was. And I thought I was in a globe.
Yes.
Thinking I was the only one. But then people had read my book, The Journey of Josephine, and I realized that I wasn't the only one.
Yes. And I'm wondering, after you said you stayed for 4 months with your uncle, but then you transitioned into a foster care system. Was foster care any better at those days? Because I'm wondering, foster care in those days, it might have been just the same situation. If you were with a family who you had another foster care dad or some sort of male relative or male figure in your foster care home environment, was it the same for you, or was it a better environment?
It was absolutely a better environment. They were amazing. They were an amazing family, and I knew that they cared for me. And I had a job at a camp for the summer. They had found a job for me for the summer. And I was stupid and did some stupid things as a teenager. And I snuck out of the camp and we went to this dance. And in sneaking out of the camp and going to the dance, I ended up losing my job. So they brought me back to their home, to their cottage that they were staying in the summer. And I didn't know how to accept their love for me and their boundaries for me. And I ended up running away because I didn't want to face them because I was afraid and I was shamed because where they were so nice to me and I didn't know how to react to people being nice.
Yes. And for anyone who might have been through a similar situation, how do you accept that kindness, that generosity, and how do you adapt to that new situation? Because obviously, you were never familiar with it. It wasn't your normal. It wasn't what you were used to. And when you're taken out of such an abusive, traumatic household and you're put into a situation where you feel loved, you know, you feel that generosity, you feel as though someone cares about you, how are you able to adapt to that? And in your case, how could you have accepted their kindness?
I'm going to be 55 years old, and I'm still learning. It's still a learning process because when my life started out with trauma, you know, it.
Yes.
So that defines you. And as you get older and as you walk through the journey of life, you come to a point in your life that you don't want to live that trauma anymore. You don't want those stories to create stories that aren't true in your society of today, in your story of today. It has taken me, I'm 55 years old, and it has taken me this long to finally be able to look into a mirror and say, I'm worthy. To look yes. into a mirror and to say, I am my first hero. I survived this. And I not only survived, but I could thrive now. And I think that's why I wrote my story, is because it was my healing that I don't have to be defined. I'm not defined anymore by a victim of assault. I'm not defined anymore by a child that has been molested as a child. I'm not defined anymore by those definitions. I'm now defined that I am my own hero, that I am somebody that thrives, that I am somebody that was determined. I am somebody that has been forgiven. I'm somebody that is beautiful, that the things that happened to me, they didn't have anything to do with me. It was those people that decided to take something from me that didn't belong to them. It wasn't a reflection of me. It's a reflection of them. And that's taken me a long time. It's not something that happens overnight.
And when you started writing your book, what was the motivation, the pull for you to share your story? How come you decided to share your story after waiting that long and just living this life in secret?
I wanted to write my story for the last 20 years. And every year on my birthday, I would go to some water. I would go to a beach. I would go to a lake and I would sit and I would say, God, is it time? Is it time to write my story? And every year, it felt like it was a no until a year and a half ago that I went to the water and I said, I think it's time. And I came home and I saw my rag doll that I've had since I was 6 years old sitting on a shelf in my guest bedroom. And I'm like, that's my story. And I began writing because I think that I've been writing my story for the last 50 years of my life. So it only took me 3.5 weeks to be able to put it on paper. And I wrote it because I wanted to give women permission to be able to tell their story. I wanted them to be able to look at my book and say, oh my goodness, I'm not the only one. Yes. I went to a house because I work for Nielsen TV ratings and I go mm-hmm. to people's homes all day long. For the last 16 years of my life, I have mm-hmm. been in different homes. And I went to this one home and we talk about things. And I told her that I had written a book and she bought it and read it. And she called me 2 days later. She goes, it only took me 2 days to write your book, but I want you to know is that your book spoke to my soul.
Yes.
And it gave me permission to be able to cry over the things that I had been through. And she said, and you crossed over cultural lines because my culture, we don't talk about this, but you helped heal my soul. And you gave me a word. You gave me my words back because as I read your story, I was reading my own. That's why I wrote my book.
Yes, that is such a beautiful message and just an amazing thing to put out there into the world. Even though you've been through all this trauma, I'm so glad you were able to create something beautiful and just heartwarming, something that could console others from it. Where can people find your book if they want to read it? And do you have any websites, any places where people can go and see your story and support you?
Yes, I do also have a website called healingthroughstories.com. It's all one word. And it is where I do blog. And I also give permission for other women that wanted to tell their story, wanted to give a testimony, that they could also send me an email through josephine.rstory@gmail.com. And I do publish their stories because I just believe that through stories, women heal. And we begin to lock arms with each other and become a tribe. My book is also on Amazon. And you can also order it on any, if you go to any bookstore, anything like that, you can order it there. but you can also order it on my website, healingthroughstories.com.
Thank you so much. And thank you for listening. If you joined us today, please do check out Bambi's website, and we hope to see you next time. Thank you.